Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, excellent. For those that don't know me, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a deacon in the church. I have grown up my entire life here, so I'm very humbled and honored to be able to give the sermon today. My parents, my grandparents went to this church. My wife grew up here. You'll see my three kids running around, probably misbehaving. Sorry. But I'm very honored to be able to give the sermon today. So this is a rhetorical question. I don't need anybody to raise their hands, but how many people have had Don ask them to do something? He's asked me a couple of times to do things. And when I ask people to do something and say, you know, Kanya, would you mind? Don is 100 times better at this than me. It's, will you pray about it? Will you pray about doing this? And, you know, I've prayed about these types of things. I always get the same answer from God. Yes, you're doing it. So it was about a month ago, maybe a little bit more. I remember we were, I think we were celebrating Braddock, my youngest son's birthday, and we were in the kitchen, and Don approached me, and he said, you know, would you pray about giving a sermon when I'm on vacation August 20th? And so I immediately joked back, sure, as long as you don't mind me preaching about Gator football. And, you know, it's football season is about to start. I can really find some stuff to talk about. And he immediately replies, well, you can tie Tim Tebow into the sermon. So, Don, this is all your fault. So I assume most of you probably know who Tim Tebow is, but if you don't, I'll give you a little bit of the backstory because it's important for the message I'm trying to give. He was a quarterback at the University of Florida. I think we had 1 year overlap. I was actually a student for one of the years he was there as well. He won a Heisman Trophy, which goes to the best college football player. He was part of two national championships. And he set a number of college football records. He had a very, very large following. He was a very popular player for a number of reasons. He had an unorthodox playing style. He had an infectious personality. He had unbelievable leadership abilities. And he was an unabashed Christian. So, and in fact, during games, he even wore Bible verses underneath on his eye black. During the 2008 season, he wore Phil 4:13 on his eye black. So Phil standing for Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So about 3 days before the national championship game, he went up to his coach, Urban Meyer, and said, Coach, I've been praying about this, thinking about this, and I'm going to put John 3:16 on my eye black. His coach, very superstitious, said, no, Tim, you cannot do that, Tim. I love that verse. You love that verse. We got to the national championship game with that verse. And Tim said, you know, I've been praying about it, and God has put it in my heart. And his coach could not rebuttal that. So he wore John 3:16 on his verse, and as everyone knows, is pretty much the most popular and kind of gateway into Christianity, that verse. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. So the Gators ended up winning that game and the national championship. But that's not the best part. Well, to me, it kind of was the best part, but it was another really good part. The next day, it was reported that 93 million people Google searched John 3:16. I don't know if that number is accurate, but it was the number one searched item. It was a huge number searched after that game. When he graduated, he was widely considered to be one of the best college football players in the history of the sport. Now, when he went to play professional football eventually, not much was expected out of him for a number of reasons, but the bottom line is that college success doesn't necessarily translate to NFL success. During his second season with the Denver Broncos, he took over as the starting quarterback about a month into the season. It's not so much that he won the job as much as the Denver Broncos were really bad. They had one win and four losses, and the quarterback that was playing wasn't very good. So not much was expected out of Tebow. They didn't think he was any good. The team wasn't any good either. So then a funny thing started happening. They started winning. And not just winning in spectacular fashion. The team, and particularly Tim, would play very poorly for three quarters of the game. And then in the fourth quarter or overtime, he would completely turn it around and win the game. And it sometimes felt like a miracle was happening. Tebow naturally was a media darling. He already had a huge following, as I mentioned. But it was only growing. And some of the stuff he would say was just, it was unbelievable. It was one of those situations where it's not like, yeah, he usually said the right thing. He always said the right thing all the time. During one post-game interview, it was suggested that he mentions God too much, and that was annoying his critics. So Tebow responded, if you are married and you have a wife and you really love your wife, is it good enough to only tell your wife that you love her on the day you get married? Or should you tell her every single day when you wake up or have that opportunity? Well, that's how I feel about my relationship with Jesus Christ. Wow. I'm sorry, Elizabeth, I'm never going to be that smooth. But Tebow is. So during the season, he did all kinds of things. Through his charity foundation, he would invite like a special needs kid to the game. He would spend time with them, take him out into the field, do all kinds of things. And if you also remember, this was 2011, Tebowing became a thing. Tebowing was essentially just praying. It was on one knee with his hand like this. What happened is because of the spectacular finishes during the game, it was often seen right before a game-deciding field goal or right after a game, Tebow would pray. And he was so popular, such an icon, that it became a thing. So people would start posting pictures of themselves in unusual places, Tebowing or praying. I mean, God forbid we have more people praying in this country, but it became a big thing. Kind of like planking was a number of years ago, if you happen to remember that. So Tebow talk was everywhere. Unfortunately for him, this nonstop coverage turned a lot of people off. There were openly people who wondered or joked that God was helping Tebow and the Broncos win. I want to say for the record, I don't think God cares about sporting events. There's enough other issues to worry about sporting events, so that's not what was happening. Although, and for proof of that, how else would you explain the Dolphins in the last 20 years? But I do think God has a sense of humor. So the Broncos, they had this big winning streak, but it came to a halt at the end of the year. They lost three in a row. It started with the loss to the Patriots, the devil. It's a joke, sorry. Don't like them. But the Broncos made the playoffs anyway, and they kind of backed into the playoffs, and they had a first-round matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers were heavy favorites. The Broncos were not playing well towards the end of the season. They also had the league's number one defense. And in fact, the Broncos, they actually had their backup quarterback start taking more practice time that week in case things weren't going so well. So game came, all eyes were on the game. And what happens? The Broncos win in spectacular fashion. First play of overtime, Tebow throws a pass in the middle of the field. Receiver catches it, runs down end zone, 80-yard touchdown. Fastest playoff game in NFL playoff history. And it was an unbelievable finish. I remember exactly where I was watching it. My daughter was a toddler at the time, fell asleep on her high chair. I was yelling, go, 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 as he's running down the field. And it was amazing. And there's a lot of YouTube videos of people experiencing that moment when they were watching it. It was interesting. So what did Tebow do as soon as the receiver reached the end zone, went down, said a prayer, as he always did. So after the game, an ecstatic Tebow was celebrating with his teammates in the locker room, as you would expect. And the Broncos public relations guy came up to him, really giddy, really excited. Timmy, do you know what just happened? And Tim goes, yeah, we just beat the Steelers. We're going to go play the Patriots. Duh, I mean, that's what happened. He said, no, I don't think you understand. It's exactly 3 years since you wore John 3:16 on your eye black. You're not allowed to do that in the NFL, so he was never allowed to do that. You just threw for 316 yards. Your average completion was 31.6 yards. The time of possession for the game was 31 minutes and 6 seconds. The peak TV rating for the game was 31.6. Tebow would later say that a lot of people said it was coincidence. Tebow responded, big God. And once again, John 3:16 was the number one searched item on Google and the number one trend on Twitter the next day. So no, I don't believe that God cares about the results of football games. I absolutely don't. But I absolutely do believe God used Tebow as a vessel that season that sometimes we have to believe in things that we cannot comprehend or explain. So why do I bring all this up? Well, besides my obvious man crush on Tim Tebow, I've spent a lot of time thinking and praying about what our role in society is as Christians. Obviously, none of us here have the platform like the NFL to spread the word. We simply don't. And since in society now, I feel like even saying you are a Christian at times is frowned upon and has a stigma associated with it. And that's terrible. It should be much more positive. The title of my sermon today is Priesthood of All Believers. For those of you that have participated in an Emmaus or a Chrysalis weekend, you may recognize that, recognize this sermon name. That's a talk given during that weekend. I know many of you here have been associated with it, a Chrysalis or an Emmaus. If you haven't, it's a three-day non-denominational Christian event that is, the Chrysalis is geared for high school students. Anyways, a team of Christians, both adults and high schoolers, spend months preparing and praying for this weekend. My entire family has been involved. The rooms are here too. A number of teams, Don. A lot of people have spent a lot of time on these weekends. And what we're doing, one of the most important lessons I've learned serving on these weekends is we're planting a seed. The results of our efforts may not bear fruit that day for years or ever at all. However, if we impacted just one single life in a small way and brought them closer to Christ, then we succeeded and accomplished our goal. Said, we're not blessed to play professional sports, but God calls every single one of us to ministry. Not necessarily to be a pastor, but to play an active role in the ministry of the church. He's calling us to make his love real for others that only you can reach, to share with others the grace you yourself have received. There was once a wise man that used to go out to the ocean when he wrote. He had a habit of walking on the beach before he worked, just to, you know, kind of brighten things up. He was walking along the shore one day when he saw a human figure moving like he was dancing. And so he started walking a little faster. He wanted to see what this young person was up to. As he got closer, he saw the person was a young man, and he wasn't dancing at all. Instead, he was reaching down for something every once in a while and throwing it back into the ocean. So he got closer, and eventually he got close enough and said, "Good morning, what are you doing?" The young man replied, "Throwing starfish into the ocean." "Why are you throwing starfish into the ocean?" "Well, the sun is up and the tide is going down. If I don't throw them in, they'll die." And the older man responded, "Well, there's miles and miles of beach here. There's starfish everywhere. You can't possibly make a difference." And the young man listened politely, went down, picked up another one, softly threw it in the ocean, and said, "It made a difference to that one." Christ is counting on us to play an active part in the priesthood of all believers. None of us can do all that is needed. Christ simply calls us to do our part. Christ's way of reaching people is through his friends, through us. Christ can only be present to the people in your life through you. And sadly, we are the only Jesus some people will ever know. And a priest isn't just a clergy person dressed in dark clothes. It's not just Don. A priest is someone who's experienced God's grace and friendship and who helps others experience God's love too. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 to 5, 9 to 10, I know some of that was up there, says that all believers share in Christ's priesthood. The Christian community makes up the royal priesthood. The priesthood of all believers is the church. The church is not this building. It is the people. We are the church. Now, there are two sacred things that happen in worship service, and I completely took this from Don years ago, but I loved it. The first is when we get together as a church and partake in communion. The other most sacred part is when we walk out the doors and serve God. We are not just Christians this morning, on Sunday mornings. We are Christians the other 6 days of the week. We don't go to church. We are the church. Look at the bulletin. It says, "Worship is over. Let the service begin." We are the church. The priesthood is a mission. The characteristics of a mission are these. It is personal. Be real and start with yourself. It is spiritual. Continue your communication with God. It is servant-oriented. John chapter 13, verses 2 to 5 say that our mission is to serve as Jesus served. So how do we share God's love? Last week I was sitting in the toddler room, the crying room, listening to Scott's sermon. Well, as best I can with a toddler in there running around. It's not always easy. And anyways, as he was giving his testimony, I couldn't help but think how well that tied into the sermon that I was preparing for. If you remember last Sunday, Scott talked about three parts of interactions. Number one was awareness and identify the opportunities you see in a week. Number two was making a plan of what to do. And third is taking the action. I thought this message was great, and I had never really thought of it in these terms before. We all have an opportunity to impact the world and everyone around us. Unfortunately, many times we simply don't see these opportunities or think we can't make a difference, but we absolutely can. Recently, I was coaching my Donovan's flag football team. Ben right here was one of my assistants. And towards the end of the year, I was a little bit down on myself, not because of the success of our football team. We did fine. The problem is I'm not a very strict disciplinarian by nature. I know that seems odd with my dad, but I'm like my mom in that sense. And we had lost behavior many times at practice in the game, and it became frustrating to me. Now, look, there's 6 to 8 year olds. How much can you really, you know, wrap them in? I don't know. But I had a lot of struggle with the behavior, and I wasn't the best at dealing with it. So after the season, one of the moms on our team of one of our players sent me a really nice email and said, "Thank you for being a wonderful coach to him. You made a rough year much, much better." And it really meant a lot to me. It made me think afterwards that, you know, I have no idea what is going on in so many people's lives. But by simply being a Christian, being a coach, smiling, treating people right, you know, all these things, I can make a difference. This week I was on Yahoo or some other website, I don't remember what it was, and I came across a story that I really wanted to share. I found it fascinating. It's a black Christian man. Those details are important. His name is Daryl Davis. He had an interesting hobby and passion of befriending members of the Ku Klux Klan. He would later say that he had a question in his head from the age of 10. "Why do you hate me when you know nothing about me?" That question went unanswered into his adulthood, and that's kind of what started his journey. Oftentimes, he would set up meetings with members and leaders of the KKK under false pretenses, knowing that otherwise they're not going to meet with him. And in fact, I think he even had a white person call them so that they wouldn't think it was a black voice, something like that. But he would set up these meetings. And as it turns out, many of the Klan members really started liking Daryl. They really took a liking to him once they got to meet him and befriended him. And the more they got to know him, the harder it was for them to maintain their prejudices. Reportedly, dozens of Klan members ended up giving up their robes and hoods, quit the KKK, and they would give their robes and hoods to Daryl as a symbolic gesture for how they turned around their lives. Now, it wasn't always easy. Certainly, there were members that absolutely resisted. And the point of me telling the story isn't to give you the solution to current racial issues in this country. I'll leave that to people much, much smarter than me. But when I read the story, I couldn't think of how courageous Daryl was. And wasn't he being a priest? Wasn't he doing exactly what Jesus would do? There's endless other ways to be a priest. You can make a difference in your personal relationships and in your community a number of ways. I think, you know, the Bible is filled with evidence that Jesus usually didn't pick the Tim Tebows. He didn't pick the star players all the time, the richest and the most popular. No, who did he choose? The poor, the sinners, the tax collectors. There's enough evidence in there of who he chose. One of the lessons that I have learned as an adult is the joy of gift giving. Now, for full disclosure, I'm actually terrible at it. The act of physically going and getting a gift and deciding what somebody wants, it's just not a skill set of mine. But when you see a kid's face when they open a present, it's so joyous. But it's not just kids. What I'm better at is more dedicating my time and effort to help somebody in need. And when you do that and you act in such a selfish way, selfless, careful there, with no expectation of reward, and you see what kind of difference it makes to someone, it's so rewarding. And it's amazing that you get such a satisfying feeling from when you give of yourself, so much more than when you receive something. You are all called, to be the hands of Christ. Engage in Christian love and action. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10 says that God gives us each unique talents and gifts so that we may use them among the people that we know. All right, so to tie the Tim Tebow story up, the NFL didn't end up working out for him. However, his impact to society today is as strong as ever. He opened up the Tim Tebow Foundation in 2010 when he was actually playing, and he has ministries and events in 55 different countries or something like that. His ministry helped open a hospital in the Philippines in December of 2014, which specializes in orthopedic surgeries. The hospital provides physical and spiritual healing to children of the Philippines who cannot otherwise afford care. Many of you may have heard of the A Night to Shine. In fact, United Methodist Church, La Palm Beach is around the corner, actually participates in this event. This is an event that Tim Tebow's foundation started a few years ago. It's a special prom night for high school special needs kids. It's a red carpet event, and it's held at host churches all over the world. It's usually held around Valentine's Day. There's a number of videos on the internet on it, and I was watching a few the other day, and they were bringing me to tears. They were just amazing. So this past year, it was held at 375 churches in 11 countries. There were over 150,000 volunteers and 75,000 kings and queens, as Tebow refers to them. Tim will fly a couple places so he can attend as many as possible. I mean, he'll usually start in Jacksonville. He may try to catch one over on the West Coast. You can only go to a couple. But he addressed one of the events this past year, and he said this: the coolest part of the night is that every single one of you is named the king or queen of the prom. But let me tell you why you are named the king or queen, because that is how God looks at you every single day of your life. Now, obviously, Tebow is a special person, but I just said there's 150,000 volunteers, 375 churches. All of those people are being priests too. Tim's foundation can't do all of that. It's all those other people that are being involved. They're the ones that are being priests as well, and it can't go on without them. Frankly, I could give you Tebow stories all day. There's hundreds of them out there, but I'm just going to give you one last one. If you may have heard, he's now playing minor league baseball. He's a fantastic athlete, but he's probably not going to be a successful major league baseball player. The odds are just stacked against him. A few months ago at a press conference, he was asked how he handled his personal life, his foundation, and sports, and how the pressure impacts him. This was his response. So much of handling sports is handling pressure. Well, what pressure do you have if you're 0-12 at the plate versus someone that is fighting for their lives versus someone that we picked up on the side of the street in Hawaii because they were crippled or they're not wanted or they were thrown into the garbage? How do you compare those things? For me, there's not a comparison. And that's why you're able to handle sports as a game, because that's what it is. Yeah, we can pursue it. We can give you so much of our time, energy, and effort into it. But at the end of the day, I know that's not why I'm here. That's not my biggest purpose. It is not my biggest calling. It is not how I want to be known in my life, not as a football player, as a baseball player, as someone that worked hard to accomplish those things. I want my life to be so much more than that. I want to be someone that was known for bringing faith, hope, and love to those needing a brighter day in their darkest hour of need. And that is something that is a life calling for me, and it's so much bigger than sports. But I am grateful for sports because it gave me a platform to be able to share, love, and care for people all over the world, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. That is what the priesthood of all believers is about, and all of us can be the hands of Christ and partake in that. Amen.
Our offertory and communion hymn is "There Is Power in the Blood."